welcome to another episode of the Coastal Drone Podcast. I am your host, Coastal Kate, and this week we have something a little bit different for you. I had a chance to sit down with a friend of mine, Mike Morlato, and just have a chat about where things came from in the industry and where things are going. Mike Morlato is an RPAS specialist with Strategic Natural Resource Consultants based out of Campbell River, BC. And outside of his day job, he's the founder at workingwithdrones.com, a site dedicated for tips for Canadian drone pilots. Mike and I go way back. He was the first real drone operator that I ever met. He was in my first ground school, which went very long, and I ended up losing my voice. It was an interesting experience, but what he was doing then was impressive, and he's been continuing to impress me since. So I hope you enjoy our chat, and next time you're at your computer, check out his website, workingwithdrones.com. All right, here we go. So Mike, tell me a little bit about what Strategic does.
Yeah, so Strategic's a forestry first company. So we focus on all phases of forestry from layout to silviculture surveys to planting programs, but we're also involved in other areas. So we have an environmental group and biologists that work in that group. And we also deal in incident management, so wildfire teams in the summer, and also spill response. So we're kind of in a number of areas, but it's core is in forestry.
Okay. And does the drone operations support, or do the drone operations support in all of those different areas, or is it mostly in one?
Yeah, it does. Actually, it's a unique position in that sense, is that I support all the different groups. And now recently we've kind of decentralized the drone program, and there's many pilots now that exist in all of our different business lines. But yeah, forestry makes up the majority of our drone support, but we certainly jump around a lot into those other sectors as well.
Okay, that sounds cool. So what would a typical day at work look like for you?
Yeah, so I do, my background is in environmental science and GIS, and I work on a lot of GIS analysis and mapping projects. So I mix my time between that and being out in the field capturing data with drones. So it is variable depending on my workloads, but I typically will support some mapping and analysis requests and some report writing in the office. And I'll also, depending on the day of the week, we may have a scheduled drone data capture for a client. So it does vary, but that would be an ideal day for me, is getting out there with the drones and escaping the office and able to do a lot of work with our teams. So yeah, it's hot sweat.
Excellent. Sorry, my thing lagged for a second there. I was going to say I wasn't going to ask what your favorite part was, because I didn't know if your bosses might listen to this or not, but you just admitted it anyway, so that's fine. Yeah. How did you end up in this role that you're in now? Where did you start from? How'd you get into the drone industry? Like, let's go way back.
Yeah, so I started my career in junior GIS positions. So I worked in actually emergency planning to start out doing GIS, supporting that. And then I moved into work with a mining operation. And then I did many years in environmental consulting on the mainland. And so a lot of my background with GIS support was in an environment business line and assisting with projects in that realm. And then I got into drones during the time I was doing environmental consulting, and then transferred over to Vancouver Island just for a lifestyle change, and was very lucky to connect with Strategic and help support them. And there is some similarities with the types of projects I've been involved in. And forestry was kind of a new endeavor for me. I'm one of the few non-foresters at Strategic, but I came with some environmental background, and I obviously came with a lot of technical and GIS background. So yeah, it's been really interesting to work with different professionals at Strategic.
And you were into drones for, like, before it was cool kind of thing. Like, you were one of the OGs I think, yeah, you were my first ever ground school class, like 2015. Yeah. So yeah, what sparked your interest like back then?
Yeah, I think it came really from the GIS side of things. I didn't grow up flying RC planes. Like I know some kids did. I got into it more from the geeky kind of data capture side of things. So once I knew that it was just another form of remote sensing, you know, in addition to satellites and fixed wing traditional aircraft to capture data, which I had learned about for years in school, I was excited to get my hands on a drone for that purpose. And I think it was around 2012 that I first jumped into commercial drone work and dabbled a little bit before that. So,
and that's like forever in the drone industry. That's like,
yeah,
if you're non-military, that's like the origins.
Yeah, definitely. That's very it's nice cool. to get in from the beginning.
Yeah, no kidding. Since you've been around in the industry for a while, what has been the biggest change that you've seen to now compared to when you were getting started?
Yeah, I think I would have to say, you know, there's a lot of different changes happen, but for me, I've really noticed a lot on the software side of things. Of course, hardware has changed and the way people are operating their businesses has changed as well, but I feel like the software side has really stuck out to me. I think early on in the drone days, and certainly there were people involved in drones even prior to myself, but back then it was really, you know, my drone's not flipping over, my drone's not flying away, this is great, this is a victory, my drone's actually capturing data and actually triggering photos. So that was, you know, considered a victory out there. And now I found that you know, we're looking at software solutions that are very advanced, and you're looking at, you know, artificial intelligence feeding into cameras and just the advances in the software to be able to do some of the things that are possible now. Even you see it in consumer drones with the flight planning software that's out there, and being able to do some really advanced maneuvers and automate those maneuvers for video even. I just see that that's been a huge change is the software and the app development side of things.
So it's like the software that's like still on the drone side of things that's developed. Do you see that on like the processing side as well?
Yeah, I think really both sides have made large leaps and bounds, and the ability to process data quickly has been huge especially for our incident management operations. Being out in the field and needing to get data right away, that's one of my favorite times to operate, is doing wildfire and spill response, because you see the usefulness of the data immediately and you can tell your it's an on matter more than clients where, you know, you can wait a couple of days or a week to present nicely crafted data, but in those sectors it's really, and those applications, it's immediate data, has an immediate need. So having that advancing and processing and be able to do that quickly has been huge.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I think I've seen that too in talking to people that were maybe early adopters of the technology from like the company perspective, and the technology just like wasn't quite where it needed to be, didn't quite provide the value that it needed. And now things are kind of coming back around. We can convince them to take another look at it. And, you know, there was a time there where I found a lot of companies had what I referred to as the dusty drone syndrome, where they would purchase some equipment and then it just got shelved. The value wasn't there.
Yeah. And we were, you know, I've been at the bleeding edge is another way to put it, where you're right into drones at the beginning, and there was a lot of hardware issues and things that really were beyond your control, just a lot of things that couldn't be easily worked out. And you'd spend more time tinkering than getting actionable data. So yeah, it's nice to be past that phase for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. So you've done a few cool things that I've been kind of following along over the years, but what would you say is the coolest project that you've worked on, or the one that you're the most proud of?
Yeah, I think for me, it was last year in the Solomon Islands, we got to be involved in an international spill response, which is quite rare even for our company. We don't do a ton of international work like that. And so it was Really interesting to take our spill response experience from Canada and to be able to go overseas and be involved down there. And I think it was just really rewarding on many levels. Challenging environments, a lot of boat launches necessary, a lot of operations in very hot conditions, you know, where you got tablets overheating and things like that. And really just connecting with the locals made it just a great overall experience.
Neat. What type of aircraft were you using for that?
So there we were flying, we brought down basically a Matrice 210, our Wingtra and our Inspire. So just to have redundancy, but we did a lot of flying with both the Matrice and the Wingtra down there. So a lot of it was actually a mix between daily overflights and also helping. So the daily overflights were looking at just situational awareness, letting people know what was going on day to day over top of the casualty where the ship was.
Okay.
And basically the other operations we did, we would support the skimming vessels to show them where the product was on the water to be a lot more efficient in skimming that product off the water. Mm-hmm. And then we would also do mapping missions to support what's called SCAT, so shoreline cleanup assessment technique. That's one of, for people in the spill world, that's very common term for the first teams that go out and you assess the beach to find out how badly oiled is it, how many staff do we need to get in here, what type of substrate is there, what kind of cleaning do we recommend. And we're able to fit in some drone mapping into our SCAT maps to really once again improve that awareness and not have to describe things in terms of the conditions on the shore as much, because we had that great drone imagery. And so that was a really interesting application for it. It felt like we were doing something that hasn't been done many times before in terms of fitting that into that established workflow. So that was very cool.
Very neat. And I'm sure some of those skill sets, like mapping the area and looking and kind of guiding where the targets needed to be, is similar to the forest fire work that you'd be doing. I mean, different payload, but similar kind of skill set from the pilot's perspective.
Yeah, it was definitely a different workflow, but it's, you know, the fact that you are presenting data that's used immediately is always a nice challenge, because you've got to do it right. There is a time limit on when that data is needed. There's a sense of urgency there. So do you like that, the challenge in those two areas for sure?
And I guess people are probably going to be familiar with the DJI multi-rotors that you mentioned, the 210 and the Inspire. What is a Wingtra? What does it look like?
It's basically a tail sitting fixed wing drone. So it's got two main props that allows it to take off vertically, and then it will transition into horizontal flight mode. And it's a really well-made drone out of Switzerland. And we were the first in Canada, I believe, to take the dive with that drone. And since then, I think there's others in Canada that have been flying it, but it's been a really good unit. It does one thing very well, and that's mapping. And that's what we do a lot of in forestry and other areas. So it was great to be able to use that for a lot of different projects. So.
I bet. Yeah, you get some of those, like the benefits of VTOL and the benefits of fixed wing all in one package, which isn't something you see. Well, I've seen it come up a bit more lately, but it's kind of newer to the industry than it had been.
Yeah, definitely.
More prevalent, I guess. How did you go about getting permissions? Like, were there any sort of special certifications that you needed to get to be able to fly in the Solomon Islands?
They do actually have regulations there, which I was quite surprised at, because although there's many nations you wouldn't think have drone regulations that now do, and they are one of them. And we were in contact with government officials directly as part of the incident command post, and when you have situations like that, it's almost easier to organize direct approvals. We see the same with some spill responses where there's Transport Canada reps on site, and there's, you know, you can often sort things out without going through the regular channels, because there's very active people involved in aviation on site. And the Solomon Islands, we were able to liaise with directly with officials that gave us the go ahead, but we still followed the similar procedures we would do in Canada, just making sure we have our spotter looking out, making sure that we can have radio comms if it's going to help us with other helicopters in the area, things like that. We were lucky in the fact that there was very few other flights other than overflights that would happen by helicopters for the spill. Okay. And over the casualties. So it was easy in that sense that we weren't dealing with a lot of air traffic, or it was very predictable where it was coming from. So,
yeah, that's reassuring when you've got multiple aircraft that you're operating.
Yeah.
Changing gears a little bit here. One of the things that I find that I'm dealing with quite often is some misconceptions that are out there in the industry, whether they're borrowing from old regulations or taking someone's opinion as fact or something like that. Is there anything out there that you see as a common misconception that you wish that you could just snap your fingers and correct?
Yeah, I think one of the misconceptions I would say is that drone equipment and data are more important than the operator. And I think that there's certainly cases in, say, for example, real estate or even marketing or promotional purposes where you can have like, you know, a 16, 17 year old pop the drone up, take some photos and away you go, and you've got something that is a usable product. But I think something I heard earlier in my GIS, you know, career was basically, and actually early in my GIS education, was from an old professor who says, think of GIS as a tool and not a career. So have another specialty first and then bring it in to add value to that. And, you know, there's many people that, of course, made a career out of just doing GIS, and there's many people that make a career out of just being in the drone industry. But I look at the real value of being, you're already in another established industry and you're bringing in drones as a tool. And so I think there's a common misconception that just the novelty of having good hardware and the ability to capture data is more important than the operator. And I think that I would rather have, for example, a 10-year veteran in forestry operating a drone than a 10-year drone enthusiast that has a less of a established presence in forestry. I think that kind of sums it up. And I think that a lot of drone operators might not want to hear that, but I feel like companies out there that are getting drone services should make sure that what's the background of this drone operator? Are they just someone who really knows the tech inside and out? I think I was humble enough to recognize that for some of the work we do at Strategic, I was a little bit of a barrier before we decentralized our drone program. You know, I have certainly not others. So it's better to enable those professionals with drones because they're already they know what they're seeing in the live feed and they know what they're looking for, than to have somebody who's trying to wear 20 hats, which is what I was doing in the past.
Yeah, that's great advice. And that's something that we try and instill too, because occasionally I'll get calls. People say, I'm tired of my career. I bought a drone. I want to turn this into my main work. And the first thing that I ask them is, what did you do before? Like, where can that skill set come in and provide value where this drone is a tool, like you said, with GIS being a tool? It's like, yeah, this is a good thing for capturing data. What do you know about the type of data that you can collect and try and apply it that way? Or even like industry connections or something like that are more helpful than just buying a drone and looking to get started.
Yeah, I think a lot of the most successful firms out there and people I've talked to that are doing really well have operated in a sector that they've already known for many years, and they're just adding drones into that equation. So, you know, looking at CyberHawk, for example, they're doing very well in offshore oil platforms. No one else can just come in and pretend they know what they're talking about in terms of inspecting offshore platforms. They were in that world for many years, and they just introduced drones as a, you know, safety first, but also many other factors, the efficiency of that. But the fact that they're niched out in that one area that they know very well, those are your best drone operators, is those that are, they have standard and they're registered professionals in the area that they're just bringing drones in as a tool, just as you would bring a GPS into the field or you'd bring other tech. That's the way I have started to see drones more and more, especially running the drone program at Strategic. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Looking forward now, so let's say next 12 months, what is it that you're most excited to see in the ARPAS industry?
Yeah, I think one of them would definitely be the streamlining of beyond visual line of sight operations and seeing that open up more. I think I'm excited to explore it. We're currently exploring that with Strategic and starting kind of with our wildfire operations. And it's something that I think Transport Canada is starting to open up more avenues to accomplish that, which is great. And I feel like it just opens up a whole other realm for drone usage and new applications and the efficiency of those applications. I think we're going to look back in 10 years and kind of laugh at our half an hour and even hour long flight times and just, you know, laughable at the endless battery swaps to complete a job. And I think that now that the hardware is starting to improve more and more, that these beyond visual line of sight applications make more sense because the hardware is starting to match that and it makes it more realistic. So I'm definitely excited about that.
Yeah, bringing those like suitcase size GoPro cases full of batteries will just be like, remember when?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's some good publications from Transport in recent weeks with the low-risk BVLOS trials that they're looking to roll out. And there's some work being done on the ARPAS traffic management side of things too. And I know Transport, I mean, a bit of a pet peeve for me being on the primarily working with visual line of sight pilots is that TC, after the regs were published, we're like, okay, done and dusted. Glad we did that. Now we can move on. I'm like, but wait, there's a few things I want you to change. But it is good to see that they're like just charging right ahead with the low risk BVLOS trials and looking for applications like that, because the landscape in Canada makes a ton of sense for trying to incorporate that and the use cases as well. I think firefighting's a really good example. Mm-hmm. Right at the beginning, Mike, you mentioned that you've got a few side hustles, but one of them is working with drones. Yep. Do you want to plug anything that's going on with working with drones outside of your work with Strategic?
Yeah, so I'm just I actually had the site up for since 2017, but it went down. I actually got my site got hacked and it kind of sent me back, but it got me to it was. You know, it wasn't a quick recovery after that, but it got me to kind of rethink things. And I'm going to be relaunching this week with a lot of content that I'm focusing on. And really, it's just learn my sharing that for Canadian drone pilots, especially. So I've got a more narrow focus that I'm going to be looking at different drone apps out there and just more of the added value side of what I'm used to using in the field and just sharing that knowledge. So yeah, it'll be up active in a couple of days here and I'm excited to get it back up and running. I won't be continuing my podcast, which actually was a great experience, but I'll be replacing that time with more YouTube content. So.
Well, that's great. I think that'll be super valuable. And if you ever really miss the podcast thing, we can always do this again.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate your time today. I know you're a busy guy, and I think that the information that you brought was going to be really valuable to other people that are working in the industry or looking at getting into the industry. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Appreciate it.
I really hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Mike. If this was something that you'd like to see a little bit more of, please send me an email. Let me know. kate@coastaldrone.co. And I apologize. There was a couple little blips in there where our internet just didn't agree with us. This was first recorded back when everyone was getting used to dealing with Zoom and working from home and all of that. So there were a few hiccups along the way, but hope you got all of the good information that Mike was able to share, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.